Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. The court has four matters on its oral submission docket today, and we will hear each of these in order and complete the submission before we take our lunch. And those of you in the fourth argument, take yours, I guess. Each side will have 20 minutes to present oral argument, and the petitioner or relator, the petitioner, may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. In the order in which we will hear these causes, they are as follows. Continental Casualty Company and Paladuro Meat Processing Incorporated versus Miguel Flores from Potter County. Albert C. Broaders, M.D. and others versus Robert A. Heist and Grace N. Heist individually and as representatives from Dallas County. Melvin Estes and others versus Veronica Atkins individually and as next friend of Chance Curtis from Potter County. And Federal Sign versus Texas Southern University from Harris County. These arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience. If you desire to purchase a tape of the arguments, you may make application with the clerk of our court. The court is now ready to hear argument from petitioner in Continental Casualty Company versus Flores.
May it please the court, Mr. Joe Bubble will present argument for petitioner of Paladuro Meat Processing Incorporated for 10 minutes, followed by Mr. Cecil Kuhn for petitioner Continental Casualty Company for 5 minutes. Paladuro has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Before you are two judgments awarding workers' compensation benefits which were obtained through fraud by the respondent, Mr. Flores. That has been so adjudicated. Yet in spite of that, Mr. Flores has since early 1990 and continues to this day to receive those workers' compensation benefits. I represent Paladuro Meat Processing in this appeal, who is the employer and the judgment creditor in the fraud case.
This is your position that he was never injured while he worked for Paladuro?
No, Your Honor. In fact, he was injured after they became a non-subscriber in December of 1989. And Paladuro Meat, as a non-subscriber, paid for the medical. He had surgery for some hernias that developed at that time, paid for the medical and paid him on-the-job injury pay during that period of time. And yet now he's recovered for these same injuries, having alleged that they occurred a year earlier.
Why haven't you been made whole by the judgment you obtained against Mr. Flores?
The judgment awards damages, which Paladuro is unable to collect, or more specifically, garnish, because of the statutory prohibition against garnishment of workers' compensation benefits.
Ordinarily the law says you get a right to a remedy. It doesn't necessarily say you can collect your judgment. Why should this be any different?
The point here is really not so much whether or not Paladuro can collect the judgment. It's whether or not the law allows an award of workers' compensation benefits that are obtained through fraud and having been so adjudicated.
If you're right, and what happens to the $150,000 judgment that you've obtained against Mr. Flores? Is that a nullity?
Not necessarily. It would raise a question which Mr. Flores would be entitled to pursue with respect to a credit on the judgment. To the extent that then flows back to Paladuro, he would certainly be entitled to a credit on the judgment.
Counsel, if we assume that assume for the sake of argument that the trial court committed error in striking Paladuro's intervention, at this stage of the proceedings or given the posture of the cases, what is the relief that is possible?
The relief is the relief to Paladuro, as a benefit to Paladuro, is in effect a credit on the judgment, going back to your original point, because the way the facts come down here, this workers' compensation policy was what's called a retro policy. And the net effect of that is that Paladuro pays $1.16 for every dollar the workers' compensation carrier pays out. And also pays for any amount reserved, so that if the benefits are stopped or repaid, then that does affect a flow back recovery to Palo Duro.
Yeah, walk me through it. How does it work? You know, we've got two judgments. You obtain a judgment for fraud. They've obtained a judgment for benefits. Where do we go from here? Assuming that there was an error in striking the intervention.
Well, procedurally, how you go from here, really, we're going the wrong path if we're concerned on how Palo Duro recovers. It goes the other way around. If procedurally the trial court and the Court of Appeals erred, then what you do is reverse and render the workers' compensation judgment, because he's not entitled legally to recover workers' compensation benefits obtained by fraud. Now, the effect that ultimately has on Palo Duro outside a judicial decision is that then the insurance carrier has to retrospectively then readjust the premium, which would be a credit on our judgment.
How did you get a rendition for Palo Duro when you weren't a party to the litigation involving the workers' comp claim?
We were a party through intervention.
Well, but you were knocked out, and now there's a judgment. How can we render under those circumstances?
Technically speaking, under normal circumstance, in reversing, you would remand back to the trial court. The difference here is that the only thing the trial court could do then is to render judgment that Mr. Flores take nothing, because as a matter of law, as a result of the fraud judgment, he cannot recover under the workers' compensation. So procedurally...
But we can't do that. And that's what you said.
Well, I think you can, because there is nothing for the trial court to do other than to render that judgment. You can also reverse remand to the trial court, the net effect being the same, that the trial court would have to render judgment, take nothing judgment on the workers' compensation.
Excuse me, is it uncontested? I mean, is there any dispute in this case that if an employee lies on an employment application and becomes an employee of the company, that and they then thereafter are injured on the job, that they are not entitled to compensation? Is that clearly accepted by all the parties here, that Mr. Flores' fraud in obtaining the employment unquestionably bars his recovery under comp?
That's hotly disputed. And
okay, so in your argument, aren't you making the assumption that this court has to conclude in the first instance that lying on the employment application bars comp coverage?
No, it's not quite that simple. In the first place, there's a lot more to it here than just simply lying on the employment application. And frankly, we'll admit that just simply lying on the employment application does not by itself bar workers' compensation recovery.
Well, let me be more accurate. You have so many substitutes for you at the physical that's necessary to get the employment. You're saying that bars comp coverage?
With the causal connection between that and the injury, yes, Your Honor. Under the United States Supreme Court case, the Rock case, which is the only other case we could find anywhere in the country with these facts.
And what finding do you have in the record that establishes that causal connection that would be binding on the floor?
If I understand your question, the finding that he committed fraud, not only in obtaining employment, but also in making two workers' compensation claims. That verdict and the judgment that rests on that verdict is what then results in that. Now, it is undisputed that Mr. Flores did have an imposter stand-in to take his pre-employment physical.
You can see there has to be a causal connection, and I'm saying, where is the finding in the record that we can render on that would establish the causal connection you can see is necessary in the U.S. Supreme Court decision?
In the jury verdict, in the
and specifically, what finding
about the back that who had the back injury that caused disability. In further in the record, Mr. Flores' own expert, Dr. Albright, the chiropractor, testified that he had seen Mr. Flores several years before Mr. Flores ever came to work for Palo Duro for another workers' comp injury. At that time, he found that Mr. Flores had the congenital malformation in his back and the grade 1 spondylolisthesis.
But that would be a fact issue unless you have a finding that the binding is Mr. Flores, correct? You're talking about evidence.
Yes.
I'm talking about what specific findings do you say that are binding on Flores that would justify us rendering?
The finding of the back injury.
So a lot of your case at the trial court and the briefs up here, it seemed to me, were expended great effort in trying to convince us that Mr. Flores, in fact, had no injury at all. But what you're saying is because you lost that, you have a finding that is a causal connection that allows a rendition of judgment that Flores take nothing.
We're not saying he has no injury at all. We're saying he did not suffer a back injury in the course and scope of his employment at Palo Duro. What he does have
you lost that, I think what you were telling Justice Owen is it's lucky you lost that, but because there was a finding that you lost that, there is then a causal connection between his substituting someone for the physical and the injury he suffered, and that is a fraud that makes his employment contract an absolute nullity, so that he's not eligible to recover comp.
No, not necessarily. I think maybe where we're getting off is whether or not it's disputed what his condition was and what he was seeking compensation for.
The question really is, what is the causal connection between the fraud and the workers' comp claim? And
right.
Your answer is, the answer is by the jury to questions 1 and 2 in the fraud case, or not?
Well, yes, combined with the answers to in the verdict in the back case.
That it wasn't because of some prior circumstance.
Right. Now, there's something else that's tied into this, and it gets pretty complex, but the workers' comp carrier also sought to have the contribution issue as part of the back case, which was denied.
I'm a little bit confused. The comp carrier can argue pre-existing conditions. Can't the comp carrier, in this lawsuit, could they not have done that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And could they not have argued in the comp case, they could have argued the issues about previous injury, or there was that this was not an injury, that he wasn't injured at the time he's making the claim. They could have argued the fraud in the procurement of the comp coverage, couldn't they?
Yes, sir.
And you agree there is case law out there that says merely fraud in obtaining employment does not necessarily vitiate comp coverage, correct?
That's right.
And the argument that the Flores is making here is the fraud findings in the fraud case are not tied to the specific facts that would otherwise entitle a comp carrier to claim it's done no comp. In other words, the only fraud you have is in obtaining employment.
No. Okay. We've got a finding he not only committed fraud in obtaining employment, but that he committed fraud in making the back workers' compensation back claim, and he committed fraud in making the workers' compensation hernia claim.
And the jury found there was fraud in making the back claim?
Yes, sir.
But there was not fraud in making the hernia claim?
No, they found there was fraud in making both workers' compensation claims. And those, in the jury verdict, those were separated. It was 3 separate questions for the jury to decide. Fraud in obtaining employment, they checked yes. Fraud in making the back claim, they checked yes. Fraud in making the workers' compensation claim, they checked yes.
Okay. And that was because he was not, in fact, injured, or because he would not have been in a position to have been injured if he had actually stood in for his own pre-employment physical?
The real difference was the evidence that was in the fraud trial that was not allowed in the comp trial regarding Mr. Flores' own motive, which he stated, the reason he was doing what he was doing, and the reason he didn't want to work was because he made more money through his disability benefits and the on-the-job injury than he did when he worked. That's the critical factual distinction between the evidence in the fraud case and the evidence in the workers' compensation case.
Again, you're talking about the evidence. What specific findings can we turn to that would establish the causal link that you perceive is necessary between fraud and the employment, and that that was the cause of the injury?
That there isn't a specific jury finding that specific. It was never disputed that there's a connection between the pre-existing condition he had and the ultimate injury he had. But there is not a specific jury finding that there was a causal connection. Well, other than the jury finding in the fraud case, I suppose, that the fraud approximately caused the damage to Valadura. We respectfully request the court to reverse.
May it please the court. The question number one in the fraud case, as counsel has stated, specifically submitted three issues. Said, did Miguel Flores commit fraud against Paladura with regard to any of the following, A, B, and C, obtaining employment, workers' compensation claim for back injury, workers' compensation claim for hernia? And the jury answered yes to all three. The question, or one of the questions, primary questions, is whether or not this constitutes collateral estoppel because the judgment in the fraud case was rendered on the same date as the judgment in the two judgments in the workers' compensation cases. We would refer the court to this court's recent decision in a combined appeal, Thomas v. Oldham and Gibson v. Spence, 895 Southwest 2nd 352. This was not specifically a collateral estoppel case, but involved essentially, it is a collateral estoppel issue, section 1.106 of the government code, where a judgment in favor of the entity will preclude a judgment against the employee, and those were rendered on the same date, and the court held that did knock out a claim against the employee.
Counsel, may I ask you, why didn't Continental plead and try the fraud in obtaining the employment in the workers' compensation cases?
Well, it was not pled originally, but it was pled subsequently.
By Continental or by Paladura?
Well, it was pled by Paladura, and it was also pled by Continental in its motion for new trial and its appeal. It was not alleged originally as a defense.
Well, if it wasn't pled by Continental in the comp case until the motion for new trial, wouldn't be waived insofar as Continental is concerned?
Well, it's our position that it's undisputed, and whether it was pled or not, it precludes a judgment as a matter of law, and the employer was a party to the suit, and at that time raised the issue.
Could Continental take an assignment of Paladura's judgment and offset that against the benefits?
I wouldn't see how, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. J. E. Faceda will present argument for the respondent.
Your Honors, I want to first tell you guys this was my first trial. And I should kill my partners for putting me up here in this position, but nevertheless, let me start by giving the court an analogy, if I can gather from the questions that are being asked. If we had a couple of individuals that suffered injury in a hiking accident, and that person that got hurt didn't have insurance coverage, but the man that didn't get hurt did have insurance coverage, and he submitted his card at the hospital in order for the first person that got injured to receive medical treatment. And by those means, he got admitted to the hospital. In the process of receiving treatment, the person that got hurt loses a vital to the negligence of the medical practitioner that's doing the service. Would that prevent the fraud in this man? There's no question that there was fraud committed in the process of him receiving medical treatment, and that the carrier would probably have an action against him for having paid those benefits to the hospital on a person that wasn't insured. By doing that, would that relieve the medical practitioner from his negligence? That's exactly what we have here. There's no question that Mr. Flores had an imposter or a stand-in or whatever you want to call him come in and take his pre-employment physical. Not because he couldn't do the job, but because Paladura insisted that x-rays be taken, and in this x-rays, he already knew that a congenital deformity would show up. So he obtains his employment by these means, by having someone else take his pre-employment physical. He works 3 years at this meatpacking plant, a very strenuous job, for 3 years. And then as things would have it, he hurts himself.
The jury found that he wouldn't hurt. The jury found that the claim for the back injury was fraudulent.
The jury in the workers' comp cases found that he had on-the-job injuries that were legitimate injuries and for which compensation should count. I mean, inherent in all the arguments that the carrier made at the court is whether these were even injuries to begin with. The jury came back with favorable findings on one hernia and on a back claim.
How could these two claims possibly be tried in separate trials and expect to come up with some result that makes a sense as a whole?
But you just, so you're asking...
All right, well, I'm asking how come the trial does it not abuse its discretion in severing the defense from the claim, in essence?
I'd state to the court that the words of the judge in serving these at the last minute again was that he couldn't possibly think of a worse nightmare in trying to try these cases together and being able to put one hat on for the Flores as a plaintiff in one case, take that hat off, put it on his head as a defendant, and then be able to tell the jury, you can consider this evidence for this case, but you can't consider the evidence for this case.
The only worst nightmare is trying to make some sense out of my appeal, I guess.
Well, Your Honor, as you can see from what's on my desk, I've been trying to make some sense of the case on appeal myself. There's no question that the man got a job by some means other than he should have. There's no question about that.
Well, to put a little finer point on it, though, the jury found that he committed fraud with respect to the two comp claims, not just with respect to the employment.
There's no record up here on just what the issues were that the court or that the jury considered, Your Honor. I mean, what fraud? We had three different allegations of back injury. This says workers' compensation claim for back injury. What back injury? Was it fraud in not crossing a T or dotting an I? Was it fraud in obtaining his employment and then not representing or telling that to the medical providers when he received medical attention for that? What fraud are we talking about? There's nothing in the record to identify for me and to identify for you as justices what the issues were.
Does that mean that we have a fact question on whether there's a causal relationship between the initial fraud and the back injury?
I'd say you never get that, Your Honor, because that issue inherently was tried in the workers' compensation case and would be subject to re-litigation.
Well, it's not binding as to Paladuro, is it? Because Paladuro was not a party to that litigation.
Why would it be binding to Paladuro? They're in privity to their carrier. I mean, their carrier is there for the sole purpose of defending them and presenting any actions they could bring on their part. I mean, it's a contractual deal. It should apply just as well to Paladuro as it would to anyone else that's in privity to that contract.
Are you, you're saying that the fraud defense was tried, was raised and tried by Continental in the comp case?
Your Honor, what I'm saying is that the jury was made aware.
Well, are you saying it's tried by consent? Because I thought in your brief you were saying it was not pled and was not tried.
Well, let me phrase it this way, Your Honor, and I apologize if I'm not understanding your question. It was inherent in the proceedings of the workers' compensation case that you had to present evidence that you had injuries and that those injuries weren't fraudulent. I mean, if this man, for example, let's take the back case. Let's say that in the trial of the workers' compensation cases, the carrier had evidence that he hurt his back playing soccer somewhere. It was their duty to bring that out and say, this injury is not work-related and therefore it's not compensable.
Isn't the point, though, that Mr. Flores would not have been employed at Paladuro if he had stood in for his own pre-employment physical?
I think that's a fact issue from everything that was that I know about what went on in the fraud case, Your Honor, because...
That's a fact issue?
Yes. There was a submission in the fraud case as to when the carrier reasonably had information to ascertain that fraud had been committed in the obtaining of employment, and they chose to do nothing. That issue came back at being some day prior to this person being dismissed from his job there for totally unrelated reasons. So my question is, these guys acquiesced to having him as an employee even after the fact that they became aware that he had committed fraud in obtaining employment.
What is the status of the workers' compensation judgment? He's been paid. Has he got a lump sum settlement?
Your Honor, the status of the workers' compensation cases are in limbo with respect to the hernias. He's been receiving TTD payments, total and temporary disability payments on the back since the inception of that injury. So he continues to receive those benefits for the back injury. There hasn't been a resolution of any of the hernia monetary sums.
Mr. Seda, if the fraud claim had been tried in the same lawsuit and you had a jury that came back and found there was fraud in the back comp claim and a finding of an on-the-job injury, how would you reconcile those two findings? Or can you reconcile the findings?
That's a good question, Your Honor. Again, not knowing what issues were presented to the jury with respect to what's fraud, I mean, fraud encompasses all sorts of things as far as information that could have been presented to the jury. If your specific question is
that the congenital back condition contributed to the injury that occurred at the job. So you've got this causal link. The congenital back injury contributed to the injury that occurred on the job. And he had a stand-in that got him the job. And so the jury comes back, and that's all the evidence. The jury comes back and says, we've got an on-the-job, we have an injury. It occurs on the job, and it's total and permanent, or whatever this finding was.
Right.
And the jury and the judge also submits a question, do you think there was fraud in obtaining, in making the comp claim for the back injury, and the jury answers yes. Now, are those in conflict, first? And if they're not in conflict, then what would the judgment be in the case?
I don't know the answer to that. I wish I was that quick of a thinker on my feet. I'm trying to... If we have Well, it definitely had to be a conflict, Your Honor, because if there's a finding that they were on the job injuries, inherent in that is that they're compensable injuries, and the only way they could be compensable injuries is if they weren't fraudulent injuries.
Is it a defense to a comp claim by the carrier that the person made a misrepresentation about a pre-existing condition that contributed to the injury? Can a comp carrier avoid its responsibility under the comp provisions by an employee who is injured on the job and is otherwise covered by comp, that they misrepresented a pre-existing condition that got them the employment, and that pre-existing condition contributed to the injury? Can a comp carrier avoid its obligations under that fact?
From the cases that we've cited in our brief, both here and at the Court of Appeals, I would say the answer to that is no. We can't avoid its obligations under the contractual obligations to pay for compensable injuries. Again, there'd have to be a finding of compensable injury. There's no question that a pre-existing condition can come in to defeat that or to reduce it. But the misrepresentation of a pre-existing condition wouldn't void the benefits. I mean, wouldn't void the contract or the obligation of the carrier to pay for on-the-job injuries. The only case that's cited for the court that even comes close to that is a case that's been very limited to its facts. It's the Rock case dealing with FELA law, which has totally different policy applications, as the Supreme Court in those cases has limited that case.
What are those different public policies?
Interstate commerce was the issue that they hung their hat on. This has nothing to do with interstate commerce.
You don't dispute, do you, that Paladuro had the right not to hire Mr. Flores if, in fact, he could not pass a pre-employment physical, do you?
Not at all, Your Honor.
And so if he fraudulently induced them to hire him, why doesn't that vitiate all of his claims under the workers' comp cases?
Because that's clearly not the law. I mean, the law clearly states that it's only his employment that's voidable, and they chose not to do that even by the issues that were presented in their fraud case.
So there's nothing an employee can do in obtaining employment that would ever jeopardize their right to recover for on-the-job injuries?
For workers' comp injuries under the old comp statute, my answer to that, there is nothing that the employee could have done in the representation for obtaining employment that would negate his right to receive compensation for legitimate on-the-job injuries. I mean, the public policy thrown back to the court is this. This man worked for 3 years. Was very productive for this company. That's the own testimony of the employer. Does he get that money back because it was a voidable contract of employment? You know, you're going to get into a bunch of other issues that really don't need to be there. The fact is, did he get hurt? And were those legitimate injuries, were they compensable? What defenses did the carrier have that they chose not to present? What information did the carrier have to convince a jury of 6 or 12 people that these weren't legitimate injuries and chose not to bring forth?
What defenses do you think the carrier had that they did not assert in this case?
Well, the defense they had, Your Honor, they had a perfect defense to say these were fraudulent injuries, that these never occurred on the job. They have to defend those. Just because I, as an attorney, or Mr. Flores, as a human being employed for a meatpacking plant, comes in and says I got hurt, doesn't prevent the carrier from saying, hey, here's my foreman, here's my supervisor, here's his coworkers. He never got hurt on the job. Let me tell you where he did get hurt. If they had that evidence and chose not to present it, it's not my fault. That would have been a defense to it. The defense would be these aren't injuries that occurred on the workplace.
Counsel, the nature, though, of his injuries were It came about because he had this congenital condition. Had he not had that, these particular injuries perhaps might not have occurred. Isn't that correct?
I'll agree with you one part, Your Honor. The hernias had nothing to do with the congenital back injury. And there's abundant testimony that he had separate injuries to the spinal column that had nothing to do where the congenital deformity was. There is testimony that his injuries or his work there aggravated that pre-existing condition there. Yes, I'll go that far.
Well, it's a different case here than it would have been had his injury been something fell on his foot and his foot was injured. That would be a completely different thing. But this case involves the back. And the company would have the right to anticipate that someone that had that condition might be injured because of that condition. Isn't that true?
Well, you know, Your Honor, now under the, you know, the American Disabilities Act, that's not even a question that can be asked to these people. The only thing that the employer can do now is physically ask them whether they're capable of doing the work. This man was physically capable of doing his work.
You mean the x-ray was unnecessary and could not have been considered by the employer because of the ADA?
I think the x-rays now couldn't be considered in denying him employment on the basis that that x-ray would show as a matter of law that he couldn't carry on his physical activities. His physical, the judge needs to separate. He passed his physical examination.
Oh, no, no, he didn't pass it.
He didn't pass his pre-employment.
He didn't pass it because his physical examination included the x-ray.
His pre-employment physical had as a prerequisite an x-ray.
That's right, so that was part of it, wasn't it?
That was part of his employment. I see where you're going there, yes. He didn't pass his pre-employment physical.
It seems to me that a few minutes ago you admitted that his prior injuries have in some sense led to this injury or aggravated this injury. If that's the case, didn't the trial court err in the comp case in not submitting an issue to the jury on pre-existing conditions?
Your Honor, let me clarify. I don't know that I admitted that his prior injuries. What I said was that if he had a pre-existing condition, that pre-existing condition may have been aggravated by his on-the-job injuries. Is that the same question?
I think that's the same. Either way you look at it, under the comp law, wasn't there enough evidence raised that the trial judge should have allowed the jury to make a reduction in its award because of that other condition?
I don't think there was any testimony in the proceedings, Your Honor, of whether any pre-existing condition contributed to this man's incapacity.
And are you saying there was no testimony or just it didn't have the requisite degree of expertise attached to it?
Well, one of them, you didn't have the requisite degree of expertise. I mean, there wasn't any doctor or evidence deduced from a medical provider that came in and said, the contribution that this man has now in some way affected or reduced by the pre-existing condition.
Is that necessary under the law?
Well, I think under the cases that we've cited, it's absolutely necessary that you have some evidence presented to the jury to be able to differentiate between the incapacities, if there is any.
Do you know of a reason why Paladura can't assign its judgment to Continental and Continental set it off against the benefits of the law?
Your Honor, it's my belief that in what we've cited also that the workers' compensation statute prior to January 1st of 91 didn't allow for garnishment of those type of benefits. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Your Honor.
The reason we have this problem, other than, of course, the conduct of Mr. Perez, is because we have one set of circumstances, which was unnaturally, and we say erroneously, divided into two trials. The reason we have a conflict is because the workers' compensation jury was not allowed to decide on the fraud. They were not allowed to hear all the evidence concerning the fraud. Specifically, you can look to the record in the statement of facts between pages 337 and 353, where Mr. Wade, who was trying the case on behalf of the comp carrier, was attempting to get before the jury the full range of facts regarding Mr. Flores' fraud in making the workers' compensation claims. That was denied. It was kept out. It was allowed in, however, in the second case.
Okay, when you're talking about fraud and making the compensation claims, I was not clear in the briefs what we were talking about here. You seem to now be arguing that the fraud was in making a claim for back injury that did not occur. Is that your point?
That's one of the points.
And you're saying the trial court in the insurance case would not permit evidence that there was a fraudulent notice claim, that basically he was not injured on the job, that he would not permit that evidence in the insurance case.
That's true.
And the insurance company tried to get that evidence in.
Yes, sir. And the reason we have this conflict then.
So you're saying, so when the jury, is that issue before us? I mean, has the compensation carrier brought an issue here that the trial court heard in keeping out evidence of that the injury was not incurred on the job?
Not structured as a point of error on exclusion of evidence.
Well, is that finding of that jury now before us for review?
Finding of the workers' comp jury?
Yes. The finding of the comp jury before us, determining that it was an injury on the job, is before us, saying that the court erred in not allowing evidence in that case?
I don't believe from an evidentiary standpoint. But
I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Sabin. Let's assume that this case was tried together. You had the jury find that there was fraud in the back claim, and you had the jury find there was an on-the-job injury. Is that a conflict or not a conflict?
No, if they would have found that, that would have been a conflict, which would have been resolved.
Then what should the resolution be? They find that there was, taking all the evidence you say of fraud and taking all the evidence of their claim that there was an injury on the job, how would you resolve the conflict?
By having allowed the intervention. That's the distinction. And that's where the problem started, is that the intervention was improperly not. And it became more complicated, frankly, because earlier on...
Is your answer that it doesn't result in a rendition, it actually results in a remand for a new trial?
At the trial court, had they been tried together?
No, your argument is that the real problem here is because there was a separation of these two cases, it needs to go back for a new trial. You see that the answers the juries gave are, in fact, a conflict. One is not
absolutely
controlling the other. They simply absolutely are a conflict and needs to be tried together. Right.
Well, no, it doesn't need to be tried anymore because fraud, that was tried. That's what was tried in the fraud case. It's now been found and adjudicated. That issue was. It was not allowed in, however, in the workers' comp case. And that's the reason we end up with a conflict. And that's why we should have been allowed to intervene. It was complicated further because we were consolidated. And up until the day of trial, we were supposed to have a consolidated trial.
But the finding of the jury that there was an on-the-job injury is in conflict with the finding that was fraud in obtaining the back in making the back claim. That's a conflict.
Absolutely.
And those are two jury findings.
That's right. Having been separated in trial, if we would have had one trial with the question, did he commit fraud, well, allowing evidence in the first place of when his injury was and the reasons and motives behind it.
Well, let me take you forward.
Okay.
You say that we should accept the finding in the fraud case as being more significant than the finding in the comp case because you had the evidence was presented in the fraud case.
No. Well, here, because of the way things came down, that ends up becoming estoppel. The finding in the workers' comp case, because it was fully litigated there, and all the parties were there.
Then Mr. Sosa says, though, we don't have a complete record of the fraud case to show what the evidence was that finding was based on.
You have not a complete record. I wouldn't say a complete record. You have a sufficient record to find that. It is incorrect. You don't have a record to establish what the issues were to support collateral estoppel, because before the court, in the record, you have not only the verdict, the fraud verdict, the fraud judgment, there's also the pleadings of the parties in the fraud case, together with most of the exhibits in the fraud case and excerpts from the testimony in the fraud case. You have everything you need in the record. The trial court had everything that he needed in the record to then apply those findings, which were found in the fraud case, and prevent a wrongful recovery of workers' compensation benefits.
Is it true that there's nothing you can do to get back what's already been paid in benefits?
I believe that's right, Your Honor.
And the benefits yet to be paid are $180 a week, which stop on May 6, 1997.
If you've calculated it, that's
right.
I think
that's from your brief. That's
okay.
From your colleague's brief.
Did your comp carrier raise fraud in the back?
In the pleadings, no. Not until the motion for new trial.
All right. Why is it their failure to raise that binding on you?
Binding on?
On you.
On me? Because
yeah.
We weren't party to that case.
But isn't your comp carrier there to defend your interest on the comp issue?
No. We're precluded from being a party to that. And the policy and the statute itself makes the comp carrier the party, and the comp carrier solely liable. So the comp carrier is only there taking care of the comp carrier. Thank you.
Thank you. That completes the argument on the first call. The court will take a brief recess.